Hey, it's a week 11 NFL review plus a Cowboys Raiders preview for Monday Night Football. Hi, welcome to the Shots into the Air NFL podcast from FTN Fantasy for Monday, November 17th, 2025. I'm Aaron Schatz. You know me as the DVOA guy from FTN Fantasy. He's Mike Tenier, and he's back after missing our last three shows. He's finally here and ready to talk about a very eventful week in 11 with a lot of really good games between really good teams. Before that, I want to tell you that the show is sponsored by our friends at Underdog. Underdog is available in 40 states, Washington, D.C., and Canada. It is the easiest place to make picks on your favorite player stats and win cash prizes. Play your first $5 on Underdog and get up to $100 in bonus funds or entries when you sign up with the code FTN. Terms apply, and as always, please play responsibly. We are always here at 11 a.m. on Mondays and Thursdays, and we take your comments if you are watching live. And Michael Allen Brewer wants to know what scenario is most likely for Atlanta in 2026. Right before we start recording, Adam Schefter announced that apparently Michael Penix has a season-ending knee injury. In fact, when you say the words season-ending knee injury, my thought is, how much of the 2026 season does this, right? Is this a meniscus? And it's season-ending because there's only 7 weeks left? Mm-hmm. Or is this something more, and we're talking about him missing part of next season?
Also, Michael Penix is bad.
Michael Penix is not good, yes. But there, I feel like Penix, I realize it's interesting. Penix has played a little bit more than J.J. McCarthy, but I feel like there's more hope for Penix than there is for McCarthy.
Oh, gosh. Oh, that's such a... Oh, that's painful to think about. Sure.
Like, I feel like Penix is not quite in the let's write him off set. Like, he's sort of in the, like, give him another year and then replace. I mean, they don't have a first-round pick anyway.
Oh, gosh.
What is this? They traded their first-round pick to the Rams to get the extra pass rusher. And,
yep. Yeah. The idea that you're going to wait and try to keep building around this young man who keeps getting injured, got benched at least once earlier in the season, gets startled when you clap close to him, makes comments in the media about, well, you know, there's more to me than football. The idea that the Falcons are going to wait and build around him, that sounds like the worst scenario for the Atlanta Falcons.
Let's start by talking about the DVOA Bowl, number one versus number two, Rams 21, Seahawks 19. I don't think it's going to shock people who are regular followers of my numbers that the Seahawks are still number one in DVOA because it was a close game and they had a big lead over the Rams. But the Rams are closer now. The Rams are second in offense and second in defense. So the difference between the two teams is still just special teams. If you looked at offense and defense without special teams, the Rams are better. Now, this game was a reverse post-game win expectancy game. The Seahawks, based on post-game win expectancy, would have expected a team with Seattle's stats to win 55% of the time. So it was basically a tie, and the DVOA for the game with the opponent adjustments was 36.8% for the Seahawks and 36.2% for the Rams because they're the two best teams. So when they play each other close, it says they're both the two best teams. That's what happens when the two best teams play each other close. But the division odds are now Rams 65, Seahawks 28,
wow,
49ers 7. And the Rams are now our Super Bowl favorites.
That makes sense. This was a game that the Seahawks would have won if Sam Darnold had thrown three interceptions. But Sam Darnold threw four interceptions.
Right. And I've been posting a lot about the whole concept that roughly 20% of passes defensed become interceptions. Okay. It's not as random as fumble recoveries, but it's random.
Okay.
And the Rams turned 8 PDs into 4 INTs. Compare that to the Eagles, who we'll get to in a little bit, who turned 10 PDs into only one INT.
interesting, but the PDs for the Rams were going into the chests and bellies.
Yes, they were. I mean, that's why it's not as random as fumble recoveries. But yeah, it's interesting because you wrote in your walkthrough this morning that we should have never really believed in Sam Darnold. And I understand that that's how everybody feels. Mm-hmm. That you have this team with a great defense, but they essentially have one wide receiver and this quarterback who we have seen melt down in the playoffs in the past. Mm-hmm. And despite what the numbers say, should we have believed in them? And I have to admit that I basically feel that same way, which is when we get to the playoffs,
right?
When we get to the playoffs, the numbers will favor the Seahawks, and I will say, okay, but until we see Darnold do it in the playoffs, I don't think anybody believes in him. And in fact, if he plays well in the wild card round, I still don't think anybody will believe in him. I think he has to win the Super Bowl for people to not expect that the bad game is coming. That being said, mm-hmm. I posted this morning on all the social medias. I wonder what social media would have said about Jim Plunkett in 1980, sure. A man who was a high draft pick who failed with two other teams. Mm-hmm. Played the Philadelphia Eagles in week 12 of 1980 mm-hmm. and went 10 for 36 with two picks and eight sacks.
I remember.
When he hit the playoffs that year.
Mm-hmm. Was terrible throughout the playoffs. Was not the starting quarterback of the Raiders at the beginning of that season. It was Dante Pastorini. Okay. And went as a wild card all the way through to the Super Bowl and stunned the Eagles in a 27-10 victory in which Ron Jaworski was the one making all the mistakes. I'm guessing DVOA would have favored the Eagles.
Oh, absolutely. In that game, the Eagles were like number one or two that year and the Raiders were like ninth. Yeah.
All right. And so that's true. That was an amazing thing. And that was 45 years ago, Aaron.
It was. I'm just bringing up as an example that maybe you never know what's going to happen. We all expect, and including me, I'm not saying right, that this right, means right. I expect that Darnold is going to be Jim Plunkett.
Right.
We all expect that Darnold is going to turn back into the pumpkin when we get to the playoffs and that we can throw out the numbers that the Seahawks offense is just not as good, especially because the Seahawks offense is all passing. Their running game is bad. That team is not running in defense. That team is passing in defense.
I'll throw one more thing out there. The 1980 Raiders were full of 1974 to 1978 Raiders who had Super Bowl pedigrees, playoff pedigrees, had been to multiple Pro Bowls. This is a team of mostly young players who are in the process of proving themselves. I think there's a difference there.
Although they did have a second-year coach.
That's true.
Flores. Who had to follow up a legend.
True. And Flores turned out to be a phenomenal coach. But also they had Al Davis, who was actually running things to a high degree.
Andrew Daly says, Darnold had one awful game and they still had a chance to win. There's a lot to like from the Seahawks still. Yes. And I will point out that this meltdown was different than the Vikings meltdown in the playoffs last year. That one was all about sacks.
Yes.
This game, what was remarkable was despite both defenses playing very well, there were no sacks in the entire game.
That's fascinating because both pass rushes were getting home consistently. A lot of throwaways by Stafford and a lot of the wrong kind of throwaways by Darnold.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I come away worried about Darnold when we get to the playoffs and feeling mm-hmm. really good about the Rams, even though right. Stafford didn't have his best game. I still think Stafford is the MVP favorite at this point, and I think their defense looked very good. Even that may have been the best game Emmanuel Forbes has played all year.
Yeah, he's coming around, isn't he? Defensive line played very well. Kitchens had two interceptions. And, of course, Landman had another very strong game.
Red Matt says, with the rehabilitations for Mac Jones, Geno Smith, Baker Mayfield, and Ghostbusting Sam, should we not have learned to be slower to write off young quarterbacks like Penix and McCarthy, for example? I will say, with McCarthy, the numbers are bad and the eye test is worse.
Yes.
Like, I haven't been watching a lot of Vikings, but when I watch the people who I trust about film and what they're saying about McCarthy on the internet, oh, my God, it's terrible. It's not like the stats are bad, but like with Cam Ward, people are like, oh, but he kind of can do some. No, that's right. Not what it is.
And the stats are bad with Justin Jefferson healthy, Jordan Addison healthy, the offensive line now healthier than it was. Just as with Penix, if you really watch it and look deeper into the stats, they look pretty bad, especially things like throwaways and accuracy with Drake London, with Bijan, with Algernon, with a very good offensive line. So those are things to worry about. Generally, though, I think what he's saying holds true. The bad organization finding a reason to give up does remain.
Yeah, I don't feel – I think we can talk about whether the Falcons are a bad organization or just a weird organization. The Vikings are not a bad organization.
No, that's true. But they're kind of going sideways right now. They haven't drafted well. Anyway, that's probably a conversation for another time. For a guy like Caleb Williams, for example, where you see signs of life, even though there's all this inconsistency and you're finding wins, saying, well, we're just going to give up on him because of XYZ, that might be the wrong move.
Red Matt says, can I ask about Niners-Cardinals post-game win expectancy? The Cardinals nearly doubled the Niners' yardage.
Okay.
Even though special teams were bad for both sides. The PGWE formula includes penalties, which are not as predictive of the future, but do help explain what happens in a game. The Cardinals had 17 accepted penalties. The 49ers had one. It is the biggest difference since a 2016 game where the Raiders had 27 penalties, including declined and offsetting.
Okay.
Brian Knowles went back and found a game from the 40s where the Bears had like 22 penalties and the other team had one, but like that's a ridiculous difference. Mm-hmm. So the post-game win expectancy said when you have one penalty and the other team has 17, you probably are going to win that game.
So much of that game was it was 35-10. And then it was what, 42-17. And like you get all these gaudy stats at the end of it with Brissett throwing it checkdowns and stuff like that.
Setting the all-time completions record, which of course belonged to Drew Bledsoe.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Drew Bledsoe and Jared Goff had 45 completions and a game, and Brissett had 47.
Was it Patriots Bledsoe or was it like Bills Bledsoe?
No, it was Patriots Bledsoe against the Vikings in an overtime game in I think 1994.
Probably a heck of a game.
Let's talk about the Eagles 16, Lions 9.
Yep.
Post-game win expectancy on this one was Eagles 79%. The Eagles are very interesting because advanced metrics say that they keep winning, they keep escaping these mm-hmm. games where they don't get outplayed, but they barely outplay their – I mean, except the Rams game. The Rams game, they got outplayed.
Yeah.
They barely outplay their opponent, but – consider who their opponents have been, right? They've played the third hardest schedule mm-hmm. by average DVOA of opponent. They have the 27th schedule going forward. So we have the Eagles now as the clear number one seed favorites.
Okay.
Although that was a playoff odds sim that I ran before the Penix news.
Okay.
Because the Rams, the Seahawks, and the Bucks all get to play the Falcons. And the likelihood of an upset just went way down.
And the Bucs went through it twice, I believe.
And the Eagles do not get to play the Falcons. And I did point out the thing about the PDs. The Eagles had a ton of PDs, most of which were tipped passes, which was kind of crazy, man. Goff was just, I mean, what you saw was pressure Goff, man, because he just could not get that ball off. We do have the Eagles, though, because of DVOA, still behind the Rams and Seahawks in the Super Bowl odds, okay. Even though the Eagles have the clear number one seed. And the Eagles, so it's really interesting. Like the Eagles are clearly a good team, mm-hmm. and their defense has been very different the last 2 weeks. This was a very average defense for the first few weeks of the season. Jalen Phillips shows up, and it's like everything seems to have clicked into place. And it's like, how much does that two games mean? Because it's like that has given Carter and Jordan Davis, like the ability to like go a little even crazier. And then we know the cornerbacks are good. And so it's harder to find a Dory Jackson.
Right. Right.
To take on him. So Lone Draftsman says that pass interference call on Detroit was bogus. I have seen worse.
We've all seen worse, but it's on the list. I'm trying to play it off. It's on the list. That's fine. Eagles are up by 7 in the fourth quarter.
Yes, the odds, the win probability odds changed by that pass interference probably was from like 10% to 0%. Like it's not like the Lions were favored to win the game before that pass interference call.
Right. Keep in mind, by the way, it's not just Jalen Phillips. Nolan Smith returned on the edge. So two edge rushers returned. And again, that makes it easier to hide in the dory in the secondary. And that's been a big difference for the Eagles.
There's so much agita from the Eagles fans about the offense. I pointed out yesterday, by DVOA, this is a better offense than last year. Like if you take out the Hurts, you have to take out the three games where Hurts was injured at the end of the season last year. Uh-huh. Despite that, this is a better offense. It's a better passing game than last year. I know that sounds crazy, but it is. Not the Super Bowl, but then the regular season.
You see it, though.
I see the problems, and I see the questions, and I see the stagnation. And part of the stagnation is the running game. Mm-hmm. Because you're not in 3rd and 2. You're right. In 3rd and 8, and it's harder. But when you compare the Eagles to other teams in 3rd and long, it's a better passing game than last year. They're in worse situations because they're playing a harder schedule, and they're constantly behind the sticks because the running game isn't working.
Right. And you're facing the Packers. You're facing the Rams. You're facing the Lions, who have a very good defense, although we think of them as a balanced team. A lot of challenges along the way. The Chiefs have a good defense this year. Not many times along the season. The Broncos. These are very tough defenses week in and week out. Eagles offense still looks terrible.
but it's not. And I mean, listen, if their defense has turned it around and we're now going to see the number one defense like we did last year, then it doesn't matter if their offense is terrible because the defense is fantastic. But I think yesterday was a lot. The Lions have a really good defense. Kelvin Shepard might be assistant coach of the year.
That's a good choice. That's a very good choice. And one thing I'll point out, the Eagles-Lions game, if you didn't watch the Seahawks-Rams game, a lot of us were watching the Chiefs primarily, they were very similar games. It's two tough teams. The winning team had to sort of scrape by on their defensive capabilities and a couple of plays on offense. That's kind of what the Eagles did. That's
right. The pass pressure didn't turn into picks for Goff the way it did for Darnold, but they were both flushed.
It turned into fourth and whatever. Like not even close to conversion.
And I mean, I don't want to go into huge into fourth down discourse. Right. I'm sure that if we went through every fourth down decision the Lions made, we would find one or two, maybe at the end, where we're like, well, by this point, it was clear how much the Eagles defense was dominating them. And when you consider that, maybe they should have punted here. Yeah. But if you look at the wind for field goals, and you look at where the Lions were on the field, they were often going for it at midfield or in no man's land where a punt doesn't get you much.
Right.
I think the problem is that Goff was just got pressured and he couldn't connect.
Right. And there was one where they were, you know, at the goal line and a field goal might have been a possibility when you knew it was a tight game. Campbell copped to it. He said, yeah, if I knew the game was going to turn out the way it was turning out, would have been different. But, of course, he then said, I accept responsibility, but we're going to be aggressive. That's who the Lions are.
Michael Allen Brewer asks, are defenses better this year except for Cincinnati? Cincinnati is the worst defense ever through 10 games by DVOA. Wow. Even after the Steelers did not have a great game yesterday. I think it's not that defenses are better. Mm-hmm. I think it's that there seems to be a bigger range of defensive play this year than in your average year.
Okay.
In other words, the best defenses seem better, and the worst defenses seem worse. Because how can you say, oh, defenses in general are better this year when you've seen Dallas?
Yeah.
And you've seen Miami, and you've seen the Jets, and you've seen Washington. Mm-hmm. What Washington has done the last month and a half, and Cincinnati. But at the same time, God, Houston looks really good and Denver looks really good and the Rams and the Seahawks and the Lions and the Eagles now. I mean, not the Eagles the first few weeks, but the Eagles now. So Broncos 22, Chiefs 19. Mike Roos says, I'm a bit late to the show, but hopefully this panel of wise men can help me better understand a sport I love. What is Bo Nix? Do I trust Bo Nix? Is Sean Payton a warlock?
Who is Bo Nix? Why is Bo Nix?
Broncos 68% GWE in this game. We now have them at 81% to win the division, and the Chiefs playoff odds we still have, they're still really high in DVOA. So even though their schedule is not that easy, we still have them at 61% to make the playoffs.
Wow. Because their dossier of, like, you know, the Jaguars loss, the Chargers loss.
Yeah, they don't have tiebreakers, but I mean, they're just a much better team than the Jaguars.
Right, right. And they got a big Colts game this week that's going to tell us a lot. We'll talk
That's going to tell us a lot about both teams, I think, when they play the Colts this week. I think the Broncos defense is the fact that the Broncos defense can play so well without Surtain is a really good sign for their future. I think the Chiefs offense definitely looked like they ran into a, like, we can't find our guys. We went through those. I don't want to overreact to the last game or two in the same way I didn't want to overreact to the early games and then the middle games, because we were like, the Chiefs are in trouble. And then we were like, oh, the Chiefs are so back. And now we're like, the Chiefs are in trouble. And the truth is probably somewhere in between the two.
They're 5-5. They're in trouble. They wouldn't be in the playoffs right now. It's objectively trouble. As for Bo Nix, if you want to appreciate Bo Nix, I suggest you watch J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix, or Caleb Williams, where that sort of game managerial professionalism.
Although Caleb's been much better this year, he's taken far fewer sacks this year.
Ugh, when you the more you watch, the less you're going to like, man.
Oh, all right.
right. He does avoid sacks. That's a big deal. But, like, he replaced them with incompletions.
Yes. Andrew Daly points out the Chiefs Pythagorean would be 7-3. It's the complete opposite of last year. Yes. If there is ever a discussion of whether close game performance is real or inconsistent, look at the Broncos and the Chiefs close game records last year compared to this year. The two teams have completely flipped with basically the same players and the same coaching staffs.
Okay. I mean,
the Chiefs were like, what, 11-0 in one score games last year or something? And then this year they're like 1-5, or I'm making this up, but it's close to that. And the Broncos are something opposite. The Broncos were like 2-5 or something last year. This year they're like 5-2 or something.
I'd feel so much more confident about that if this was some game where Mahomes got the ball and they drove down the field and then it was a pass batted at the line or something like that. They were lambs at the end of this game.
Yes, you were waiting for the big Mahomes comeback and it didn't.
Right. Or the step up moment by the defense where it's like, they bat the ball back in Nix's face and things like that. Nothing even remotely like that happened.
It was really interesting, by the way. Tony Romo was like ball washing Justin Watson so much during that game. And I'm like, really? Like, he's good, but, you know, come on now. Like, really?
Right. Yeah. Right. I guess I missed that. That's surprising.
That was a lot of it. Okay. Bills 44, Buccaneers 32. This one was not close. Bills with post-game win expectancy of 92%. We still have the Buccaneers at 90% to win their division. We'll talk about the Panthers in a second. The NFC playoffs, based on our playoff odds, are basically decided.
Yeah.
It's the Rams, Seahawks, and 49ers, mm-hmm. the Bucs and Eagles, mm-hmm. and then two of the three NFC North teams.
Right, which will probably be
the Packers and Lions.
Probably be the Packers and Lions.
And even though they're behind the Bears right now.
Right. Reality's going to sit in on that. Okay, cool. Let's start the playoffs now.
The Bills are inconsistent, right? But you point out and walk through, it's almost like they play up or down to their opponent, right? Like they play up, so which means when we get to the playoffs, they're going to be playing up because they're going to be playing good opponents, and they went out there without their number one receiver. I mean, he's not a great number one receiver, but he is their number one receiver, and they moved the ball all day long, and Josh Allen threw that crazy pick at the beginning that seemed like a really terrible decision, but he was avoiding a safety, and it worked out for them because the field goal ended up only having a field goal. It's honestly better to give up a field goal than to give up a safety and give the other team the ball.
Given out a lot of credit on that one. He almost gave up a pick.
But then, you know, he became Allen and he was just running and passing all over everybody. And
game was
close. So, yeah, when the Bills are good, the Bills look very good. And then we just wait for what's going to happen when they play the Jets or something.
Right. Well, are they going to trip? The game was close until like late in the third quarter. honestly. The Buccaneers.
Yeah, Mayfield, and then the Bills pulled away, and at the end, the Bucs were trying to come back, and then Mayfield, I think there was a sack fumble. And
yeah, but Bills' run defense remains a problem. That didn't look good there. Schematically, I don't know what they're trying to do.
Bills' run defense is really bad.
It's a real problem because Sean Tucker was running all over on the Mayfield.
The Bucs went into this game 25th in run DVOA, and Sean Tucker went nuts.
Sean Tucker went nuts. Rachaad White was getting some positive plays. Mayfield was scrambling effectively.
Reverse post-game win expectancy games. One was Seahawks-Rams. Mm-hmm. The other was Falcons, 68% over the Panthers. Sure. It's a topsy-turvy year where teams like Houston and Baltimore are in the top 10 at 5-5.
Mm-hmm.
While, here we go, the Patriots at 17th are the second lowest 9-2 team ever.
They're 17th in DVOA now?
17th.
They went down?
They went slightly down. Well, they went down from the Bucs game because their efficiency was so bad. And they went slightly down from the Jets game because the Jets are so bad you should beat them by more than that.
Right, right, where it was a very messy win, although it was a Thursday night game. That makes me like a Patriots apologist.
I know. It feels weird for me to be Cassandra about the Patriots because that's my team.
Right.
I want my numbers to be wrong. I want them to be like the 98 Falcons. The 98 Falcons were totally overrated, according to DVOA, for the first half of the season.
Okay.
And then they plugged it into gear and they played up to their record for the rest of the season and they made it to the Super Bowl.
Right.
I would love for the Patriots to be like that, but I'm the one who has to be like in the press box at Gillette.
Okay.
Like, hey, they're not that good. It's not that good.
You're lucky you survived.
You're
nuts up there, man.
The Chicago Bears. Chicago Bears, 25th. The second lowest 7-3 team ever.
They are not good. That is not a good football team. Their defense is getting all these takeaways against the J.J. McCarthys and Tyler Shucks and Jackson Darts of the world. And they're running the ball well. And they're still needing fourth quarter comebacks to win the game. They are a bad – they're not a bad team.
They're in fourth place right now.
It's – the number of fourth quarter comebacks against, like, last place or losing record teams is absolutely stunning.
Fraser Lamont says, who are the worst 9-2 and 7-3 teams? The worst 9-2 team is the Vikings from 3 years ago.
Yes. Oh, God. They were fun.
Way worse than the Patriots. The worst 7-3 team is the 1986 Kansas City Chiefs, who did eventually finish 10-6 and lost big in the wild card round.
Okay. It's like Bill Kenny, the quarterback.
The Carolina Panthers. 6-5, 26th in DVOA. The Carolina Panthers are the second worst 6-5 team of all time, behind the 2016 Houston Texans. And we knew and I have had a little bit of texting back and forth about the Carolina Panthers, not as good as their record. Like, run defense, not that great. Like, it's a passing game. Bryce Young was the leader in DYAR yesterday, but if you look at the whole season, you're like, maybe this guy needs to be replaced. I mean, I feel like a game like yesterday is going to make them go into the offseason like, Bryce Young, let's do it again for another year. But,
Right, right, because you get that game, then you get two really bad ones, then he gets hurt, then you get that game, then you get two more really bad ones. And this goes back to what I was saying. Like, there's a bunch of teams I saw, and their DVOA is like -20% or lower. And these teams, like the Bears and the Panthers, and of course the Patriots, who are cut above those teams, keep playing them. They just keep playing them.
And right. The Patriots play the Bengals this week, who might be without Jamar Chase if this whole spitting nonsense gets them suspended. And then the week after that. They play the Dolphins again, I think.
Oh, my God. Who knows
what they'll be. And then they play the Bills and the Ravens.
Right, right. So there's almost like there's two leagues. It's almost like it's the mid-majors all get to play each other and get these records while the SEC schools are like clobbering each other. That's what it feels like right now.
All right, let's do the top 12. This is weighted DVOA. I'm going to move now to using weighted DVOA so we put a little bit more weight on recent games. Tampa Bay, 12.
Yeah, they're still
Baltimore, 11.
we didn't talk about Shador.
Shador was horrifying. Minus 176% DVOA.
Shador was like a looked like a guy doing a bad imitation for Saturday Night Live of Shador.
I mean, you know, a little respect to the idea that it's hard to come in as a backup, especially if you're a rookie and you haven't had any, you know, you're not a veteran who's got experience and you roll off and you haven't had any first team reps. Well, it's horrible. Just horrible.
It was, yeah.
Buffalo, 10th.
Up and down team.
Houston, 9th.
All defense.
All defense. Green Bay, 8th.
All defense. Little sign of life yesterday, offensively.
Denver, 7, up 2 spots.
Mostly defense.
Philadelphia, 6, up 1 spot.
Mostly defense.
Just the last couple weeks. Before that, it was more
offense. Right.
Kansas City, 5.
Hanging in there.
Detroit, 4.
Okay.
Indianapolis, 3.
Big game next week against the Chiefs.
LA Rams, 2, and Seattle, 1. But with a smaller gap between them, like I said earlier, smaller gap than last week. And if you took out special teams, the Rams are number one.
Right. Rams have all those kicking problems. Seattle's had a lot of big plays on special teams this year.
Michael Allen Brewer says, was Shador worse than Cousins?
Yes.
By the numbers, yes. By the visuals, yes.
Yes. Yeah. And Cousins is going to go out there and be like, oh, and then just throw it away. Shador was running around circles, staring down defenders coming right at him, bouncing balls off of Kyle Hamilton's hands, doing intentional grounding penalties. It's the difference between a old guy who can't do it anymore and a young guy who has not bothered learning how to do it.
Yeah. Monday Night Football, the 3-5-1 Cowboys at the 2-7 Raiders. Not the greatest Monday Night Football game. The Cowboys are 28th in DVOA, 22nd. The Raiders are 28th. What's interesting is the Raiders defense in the preseason, when I predicted that the Raiders were going to be reasonable, part of it was we have their defense as being kind of average. What a surprise. And guess what? Their defense has been above average.
Wow.
Geno Smith has collapsed, but their defense is ninth. Meanwhile, the Cowboys are all offense with no defense. If it wasn't for the Bengals, they would be the worst defense in the league. Very weird. The Raiders are dead last running the ball.
With
Ashton Jante at running back, they are dead last running the ball.
And the defense is chirping at the offense. And it's very possible that the Carroll guys are chirping at the Brady guys who are chirping at Chip Kelly. What is the Cowboys' playoff odds? They still have playoff odds, right?
Oh, I will have to look that up, but they are not good.
Not good. I actually have the page up, but I don't think it's updated.
I haven't updated that page yet. I didn't get a chance to. So here is with the playoff odds for the Cowboys are 3%.
Oh, my gosh. I thought they were better than that.
Oh, no, well, too many good teams in the NFC. There are six. Too many teams with six wins or more in the NFC. It's
right. And then the Cowboys
basically have to run the table.
Right, and the Cowboys after this have a bunch of tougher teams. I think the Cowboys win tonight. Despite what you said, I am wondering about the over, because the over is way up at 50.5, despite what you said about the Raiders' defense.
Yeah, you're thinking go over because the Cowboys' defense is so bad. And Brock Bowers is back, and the Cowboys are 25th against tight ends.
Right, but Geno's playing with a bad quad because they refused to bench Geno for Kenny Pickett, which
tells you a lot about Kenny Pickett. Red Matt says, I never understood why they hired Chip Kelly. I understand because Chip Kelly was running a very good offense at Ohio State and a very different offense from what he was doing in the past. So it was not like, oh, God, retread Chip Kelly is going to do his wacky Chip Kelly stuff. It was like, oh, Chip Kelly has evolved. Maybe he should come back to the NFL. I don't think what's wrong with the Raiders this year is that Chip Kelly is calling a bad offense. I think the problem is that Geno Smith aged and Brock Bowers got hurt.
Geno Smith aged, Brock Bowers got hurt. Their receiving core was never particularly good. There's backroom stuff going on that's kind of weird. And all you said about Chip Kelly is true, but also old boy network. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That does it for the show. Thank you, everybody, again, for joining us. Thank you for listening. Please like and subscribe to the show and tell your friends about the show. Most podcasts say to like and subscribe, but I'm going to add tell your friends about the show.
Please.
Tell them to watch us live on YouTube at 11 a.m. on Mondays and Thursdays so we get even more cool questions and comments. And we will be back on Thursday to preview week 12. Until then, enjoy the Cowboys and Raiders and use FTNFantasy.com. And we'll be back on Thursday. So long, everybody.